Morning. Today's daf Nida is daf Tes. We are on the bottom of Ches Amud Beis, and we're going to be starting this morning with the word Sana Rabbanan. No, just a little bit more than that. Sorry, we covered that yesterday. Mu'ubers Mishiyodea Ubra. Okay, we're defining our four women. Our four women in the Mishnah who are given the status of Dain Shaitan. So again, this has been the topic of the first part of the Masechta. It's now over a week of this discussion, where a woman is given a status of Dain Shaitan when she is proven to be Misalekas Damim. Her blood is in abeyance, and as a result of that, we're not expecting her to bleed, and because of that lack of expectation, so therefore when she does in fact bleed, and she starts having her menstrual cycle, we're not going to go back 24 hours. As we learned at the beginning of the Masechta, the Chachamim made Gzera D'Rabbanan that we're going to make her tummy not only at the time that she saw, but retroactive 24 hours because of the concern, the possibility that maybe the blood was there at an early period in time. And so therefore, retroactive 24 hours from the time that she actually saw, so she's going to be Tameya, and anything obviously she came into contact with is tummy. And we spent a lot of time over the first week of the Masechta going through the details of this particular halacha of Tuma Me'es Le'es. Yesterday's daf, and quite frankly the day before, in daf Zayin and Medalev, so we learned a Mishnah together, where according to Rabbi Eliezer, there are four women who are not going to go back 24 hours, but enjoy the status of Dain Shaitan. These four women, what they have in common is that they're Misulak is Damim. They have an abeyance of blood, and as a result of that, because of our lack of expectation, they're not going to go back 24 hours, but they're only going to be Tameya from this point going forward. Those four women of the Mishnah are the Besulim, Muberes, Menika, Vizikena. And what we have been doing now, we did it yesterday, and the day before, Daf Zayin, really the entire Daf is dedicated to the idea that we do Paskin like Rabbi Eliezer. That was Daf Zayin. Yesterday, we started the discussion in the Gemara of describing and explaining each one of these four women. The first one was Besula, which is what we did at the end of yesterday's Daf. Besula is a woman who has not started her menstrual cycle, i.e. she's young, she's approaching the age of adolescence, but she's not there yet, and she hasn't started menstruating. So she obviously is Misulekas Damim, as she has not historically had her first menstrual cycle. Mu'ubaris, we're now talking about the pregnant woman. The pregnant woman obviously also is Misulekas Damim. As a result of her pregnancy, she stops menstruating. It seems like, and we're about to start the Gemara now, but it seems like in the time of the Gemara, she didn't stop menstruating at the time of conception, but it occurs at a later point in time. And it seems like from the Gemara that really the stopping of her menstrual cycle would be sometime around 3 months into pregnancy. And I know, I mentioned this yesterday, and I'll say it again today. I know that biologically, physiologically, we don't experience that. And so it's one of those oddities within the Gemara where the Gemara seems to be describing something which is a natural phenomena, and it's not the same thing that you and I are looking at nowadays. Okay, and obviously, obviously that's, it's uncomfortable. It's, what happened, what changed. Okay, but that's just simply the facts on the ground, and I'm just presenting it the way they saw it. Muberes mishiyodea ubra, v'kama hakaras haubar. So when does a woman start showing? And again, it's not a question of when does a woman start showing, because you know when a woman starts showing? Ready for this? When she starts showing. Meaning what the Gemara is trying to do is the Gemara is going to try to give some sort of average, some sort of actual time period, because this is a halachic discussion. And so, halachically, when are we talking about? Simchus or Mishum Rabbi Meir Shlosha Chadashim. And so the Gemara cites an opinion of Simchus, which is that it's 3 months. V'afa pishim ra'la davar zech ladavar. And the Gemara says, look, I can't prove it to you that in the Torah explicitly, but I do have a great allusion. So, and he cites the episode of Yehuda and Tamar. So Yehuda is with this Zona. He didn't know that it was Tamar. And then 3 months later, he looks at his daughter-in-law, and he sees that she's pregnant. And he goes ballistic. What's going on over here? Now realizing that he was the father. But anyway, as far as we're concerned right now, the part that interests us is the idea that the Torah says that it's like 3 months later, and she's pregnant. Kim shlosh chadashim. So zech ledavar krak sivirai gedolihi. So the Gemara says, you know, it's so funny. You're saying that's an illusion. What do you mean it's an illusion? The pasuk says 3 months. So it seems to be that the raya, the proof is excellent. So the Gemara says, no, You know, some women give birth after a 9-month gestation period. Some women give birth after a 7-month gestation period. And so therefore what? So because there are women who are on both ends of the spectrum, so it's not clear when the pasuk says 3 months, is the 3 months specific to a woman who had a 9-month gestation period? Maybe for the 7-month gestation period, it's going to be prorated. Maybe it's not going to be prorated. And so therefore, even with the pasuk, we don't have absolute clarity on this issue of 3 months. But it's still, it's a strong remes. It's a pretty good proof. Tanu Rabban, the Gemara quotes a braisa. Hai reisha haisa becheses meuberes. Let's say she was in a chazaka of being pregnant, meaning she started showing. V'ra'as adam, and then she started bleeding. V'achakach yipila ruach o kol davar she'eino shel kayama. And then she miscarried. And Rachmanus, she miscarried something which was not viable. It was ruach, literally air, or davar she'eino shel kayama. Whatever it is that came out of her, but Rachmanus, she miscarried something that was not a viable child. Harehi becheskas, becheskasa v'day shaita. So, and so the Gemara now is going to make the point that she's still going to be in the state of Mesulakas Damim. We're still going to say Dayashaita, which means that she's not going to go back 24 hours with this blood that was issued out of her. Because even though she didn't actually deliver a child, but still she was pregnant, and that pregnancy puts her in the status of being in a Mesulakas Damim. And here the Gemara again says, look, I can't tell you that the Torah says this outright, but I found an excellent allusion found in Sefer Yeshayahu. The Navi says, Shenemar harinu, chalanu, kamo yalanu, ruach. The Navi, describing the Jewish people, metaphors, right? The Nevuah, a lot of metaphors. So the Navi is describing the Jewish people as having gone through the birth, through the pain of carrying a child, an actual childbirth, and what came out was nothing. Meaning it wasn't a viable child that came out. And that's how we feel. We are a lot of pain, and it's seemingly, again, the metaphor, nothing to show for it. So, my zech ladavar harei rai gadol hi. So the Gemara says again, zech ladavar, isn't it a wonderful proof? The Gemara says no. Ki ksiv haikra b'zecharim ksiv. No, the Pasuk's talking about males, meaning the Pasuk is just a metaphor. The Pasuk is not giving us an actual biological description of a woman who gave birth to nothing and still describing that as a pregnancy. The Navi is just giving a metaphor. So you can't take a metaphor of the Navi and use it to give halachic definition. Or remainder of the Gemara challenges, Kasha Shnayim, Ulishlishi Yipila Ruchel Kol Davar She'eino Shel Kayama, Reze Yoles Bezov. Okay. The Gemara quotes a braisa, and again, this idea which we explained just a day earlier, but I'll explain it again, right? The more times that we go over this, the more comfortable we're going to get with this idea. A woman who has bleeding during her Yemei Ziva. And after 7 days of her being a Nida, so in the next 11 days are what's called Yemei Ziva. If she bleeds 3 consecutive days during her Yemei Ziva, she's what's called the Zava Gadola. As a Zava Gadola, she now has to count Shiva Nekiyim, 7 clean days. She then will bring a carbon on day 8. All right. If, however, the bleeding that occurs during the Yemei Ziva can be attributable to some other factor, so that's not what's called the Zava Gadola. Zava Gadola means that the bleeding that's coming out is only because she is a Zava. So for example, if let's say the 3 days of bleeding during her Yemei Ziva is at the end of the pregnancy, and at the during the Yemei Ziva, she actually then gives birth. Let's say on day 3 or on day 4 after the Yemei Ziva. So what we're going to say after bleeding during the Yemei Ziva, we're going to say is that bleeding is not as a result of her being a Zava. That bleeding is a result of her being pregnant and her delivering a child. And so therefore, we do not qualify this bleeding as Zava bleeding. It's childbirth bleeding. And so therefore, she's not going to be a Zava Gadola. Over here, the Brises teaches us the following. She bleeds 2 days, and on the third day, she also bleeds, and then she miscarries, and what comes out of her is, again, this bag of air, or something which is simply not viable. So is that now, does that qualify as delivery blood or is that Ziva blood? And the Braisa here tells us very clearly, it's Ziva blood. Why? Because the pregnancy is not regarded as a pregnancy because what came out of her was something that was not even a viable fetus. V'yamar le'damal yasehi. Now the Gemara says, now wait 1 second. That goes against what we just said. We said moments earlier that a woman, even if she gave birth to something which isn't viable, she's still going to be afforded the status of daishaita, i.e., the pregnancy still counts as a pregnancy. And now you're telling me regarding the bleeding that occurs right before this non-viable delivery, you're telling me the bleeding is not Leda bleeding, but Ziva bleeding? I'm confused. So the Gemara says, Koshi Samach Leda Rachmana Ta, I'm sorry. V'yamar Leda Mal Yasehi. Let me just finish reading the Gemara's question. We're on the top of Testament Aleph. Koshi Samach Leda Rachmana Tahare. So bleeding that occurs at the end of her pregnancy, right before delivery, the Torah is Matari that. The Torah says that that's not the blood of Ziva. That's the blood of Leda. Amar Rav Papi, Hanach Meisleis the Rabbanan. So the Gemara is going to give two answers. Answer number one of the Gemara is that of Rav Papi, which is that, look, let's start off with the basic rule. And that is that if she gives birth to a sack full of air or something which is just not viable at all as a fetus, so it does not qualify as a pregnancy and as a delivery. And vis-a-vis the bleeding is considered damziva. Okay, that's the starting point. We were lenient regarding the me'es la'es. Okay, so we're lenient regarding me'es la'es. This 24-hour retroactive period is only a chumra de rabbanan. Now, obviously, I say only a chumra de rabbanan. We'll follow it, of course. But in other words, but because it's a chumra de rabbanan, so there are allowances and dispensations that one can make. Even in this delivery, which doesn't qualify as a delivery, but at least we can call it a delivery enough because we can be lenient vis-a-vis tuma meseis. That's approach number one. Approach number two of the Gemara, Papa Amra Midu Utaime Elamishum de Rosha Kaved Aleha Ve'Evra Kvedem Aleha. Hachanami Rosha Ve'Evarim Kvedem Aleha. The Gemara says, look, again, we'll go, it's a similar approach, but it is a halachic answer, but it really gives more of a physiological explanation. The Gemara says, look, as far as the blood is concerned, the blood qualifies as Yemei Ziva, and it's not the blood of a Leda, if what comes out of her is something which is not viable. Okay, again, same starting point. Why are we lenient regarding Tumah Meisleis? Because the reason why a woman is concerned, the Chachamim are concerned for the woman that the blood may have come out just a little bit earlier in the last 24 hours is because she is a healthy woman and the bleeding may have started a little bit earlier. But if you're talking about a woman who is feeling who's feeling a delivery, she's going through what right now feels like pregnancy. Her head is heavy, right? Rosha ve'evareha kvedim aleha. Her head is heavy. Her limbs are heavy. In other words, she feels pregnant. That sensation of feeling pregnant is enough to call her mesulekes damim, so that they're not going to give her the tumas meiseis. Again, vis-a-vis the bleeding itself, it's not the bleeding of Leda, it's the bleeding of Ziva. But vis-a-vis her status of mesulekes damim, because her sensation is such that she feels like she's pregnant, so therefore we're going to go back and not give her the 24 hours. Okay. Again, I'm going to go back to what I said in the beginning of Shir today. Back in the day, so they were menstruating into the pregnancy and about into the third month. And so therefore, when she starts showing, then and only then do the women generally stop bleeding altogether. And so therefore, she's considered mesulekes damim, and any bleeding subsequent to that during the remainder of her pregnancy is going to be only daishaita and not meiseis. It's not going to go back 24 hours. Gemara over here asks a really pinpointed question. Let's say that she sees right before she ends her first trimester. And then, after she saw, now the seeing of the blood occurred immediately before the trimester ended, the first trimester ended, and then she starts showing. Like, right, next morning, right? She has her first indication that she's pregnant, physical indication. So now, mahu, kevin to be eaten at the chazai lohuka ubramatamya. So what are the two sides of the question? On one side of the question is that when she saw, she hasn't started showing yet. Meaning she discharged the blood immediately prior to the conclusion of her first trimester. Odilma came into Samachla Chazai Lamatamya. On the other hand, those 24 hours now are going into the beginning of the second trimester. And so maybe since those 24 hours it's retroactive. I take that back. Let me say it again, right, more correctly. since she's so close to the beginning of the second trimester, maybe we can consider it as if she has seen during the second trimester, i.e. when she's showing. So Amalei midu time ela mishum de rosha kaved ala ve'everk ve'edim aleha, be'ina de chazayim rosha kaved ala ve'in ve'everk ve'edim aleha. And again, the Gemara gives an explanation that we gave just moments earlier. This idea of calling her Mesolekes Damim is really a function of her feeling slow, heavy, and that only occurs at the beginning of the second trimester. So any bleeding that she sees during the first trimester, the Gemara's assumption is that she's not having the sensation of heaviness and lethargic. And so therefore, the bleeding that occurs at any point during the first trimester, even at the end of the first trimester, is going to be considered, quote-unquote, regular bleeding, and therefore she's given Me'is Seis. And apparently, back in the time of the Gemara, morning sickness also, at least during the first trimester, was not a thing. The Gemara asks another question. This is going to be our first discussion of Vestos. It's going to be coming up a number of times in the upcoming Dapim of Nida. And this is going to be called, we'll count it as our first official foray into the world of Vestos. So a word of introduction before we go further in the Gemara. A woman has a menstrual cycle. And with that menstrual cycle, so that means that basically she knows when the next one is coming. In the time of the Gemara, there's what's called a Vestos Kavua. Now, we've already seen this in the beginning of the Masechta, this idea of a Vestos Kavua. A Vestos Kavua is basically that not only does she have an idea when it's coming, she knows. She is on the clock. This woman is clockwork, right? She is expecting on a fixed interval, and she knows exactly when it is. Now, fixed intervals, we're going to talk about this later on. I'll just make mention of it now. Fixed intervals could be the number of days between each of her menstrual cycles is a constant, or it could be that she sees the same day of every month. And of course, when I say month over here, I mean lunar month, not solar month. So she sees the same day of every month, fifth of the month, every month, right? Fifth of Cheshvan she sees, fifth of Kislev she sees. In other words, she sees the same day of every month. There are a number of ways of calling it a Vest Kavua. Now, for the woman that is a Vest Kavua, so that means now that she can pretty much count on when the next time she's going to start her next cycle. And so, our Vestos de Oraisa, our Vestos de Rabbanan. This idea now that she is approaching her next menstrual cycle and it's a fixed cycle and she knows when it is that a Din de Oraisa? What does that mean it's a Din de Oraisa? What it means is, says Rashi over here, is that the requirement for her to examine herself on the day when she's expecting it to come is a de Oraisa requirement. And, I'm going to add an important point, failure for her to check is going to lead us to the assumption and conclusion that she actually saw on that day. Even though there's nothing visible, right? There's no evidence that she saw, and there's no flow continuing after that day. But if you subscribe to the idea of Vestos de Oraisa, so that means that there is a Torah requirement for her to check on that day, and failure for her to do so will leave us only with the conclusion that the menstrual cycle began on that day. On the other hand, Vestos de Rabbanan would seem to indicate that it's not a Din d'Oraisa, it is a stringency imposed by the Chachamim, and presumably, if Vestos de Rabbanan, and she didn't check, so presumably then she is not as automatically assumed to be a Nida. That would be the basic difference of whether we subscribe to the idea that Vestos d'Oraisa or Vestos de Rabbanan. Okay. Again, that's all by way of just a short introduction. By me, nay.
So Rashi says that Vestos de Raisa is halacha Moshe
Messina. Yeah, he does say that.
We hold halacha Moshe Messina as de Raisa?
Yes, the answer for sure the answer is yes. The Rambam writes in his introduction to Mishnah Torah that there are five parts of Torah Shebaal Peh. The second, right, first one is Perushim HaMekubalim. Sorry. First one's Perusha Mamukubam, and the second one is Halacha Moshe Mesinai. Yeah, yeah. There are, on a different occasion, so we discuss this, there are possible leniencies of Halacha Moshe Mesinai that exist outside of that which is written in the Torah. Arlas Chutzaretz is just an example, whereby a Suffolk Arlas Chutzaretz were Mekel, and some explain that it's because Arla outside of Eretz Yisrael is halacha Moshe Mitzrayim, and so therefore we could be makel by suffik. Just as one example, one possible example. Rav Yochanan, the following elder asked the following question from Rav Yochanan. Let's say she's pregnant. Let's say she's on a fixed menstrual cycle. And now during pregnancy, with a fixed menstrual cycle, she didn't check. And what would be her status? So, and I'm asking within the opinion of Vesus Daraisa. Came to Vesus Daraisa by Bedika. So, on one hand, Vesus Daraisa, and therefore a Bedika is required. O Dilma, came to Damemus Alakin Lo by Bedika. On the other hand, she's pregnant. And now, with the expectation that there's an abeyance of bleeding. And so, therefore, even if I take the position of Vesus Daraisa, but it's mitigated by the fact that she's pregnant, and there's an abeyance of, and there's an abeyance of blood. Amalei Tanisui, and he said to that, he says, we learned it. We learned it together in a Mishnah. A Mishnah we're going to be seeing later in the Masechta, a month from now. Rabbi Meir Omri Maisa B'machba. Let's say the woman is in hiding. Army troops are going through the town. And so everyone now is scared for their lives. And this woman found a hiding spot. But she's terrified. And V'higi Yashas Vesta. And her... And on top of all that, the time in which she's expecting her menstrual cycle to start has come and gone. V'lo badka, she didn't do badika. So tihora, she is going to be tahor. Why? Shecharada mesalakas es adamim. Because the fear that she's experiencing is going to create an abeyance of bleeding. And so therefore, even though she should have checked, but given the circumstances, and more importantly, not just the circumstances of she's an ones, but more importantly, the fear that she's experiencing is going to put her in a status in a category of Mesalakas Damim, and so therefore, her unchecked vest is not going to count against her as her being a Nida. Taimadika Charada, Haleka Charada, Vigia Vesta Velo Batka Tamea, Ama Vestos Raisa. So the Gemara now says that if you take the fear away, if you take that factor away, that variable away, so then obviously she would be a Nida. And that means then that the author of this Braisa, i.e. Rabbi Meir, is of the opinion that Vestos Daraisa. And so what we're saying is that even when Vestos are Daraisa, if there is a mitigating factor like fear, so that's going to make her Mesalakas Damim. And now the Gemara just finishes its point. So if fear is a mitigating factor, so then it's fair to argue that pregnancy also is a mitigating factor.
But only if she was showing.
Correct. Because her status of being pregnant is only when she starts showing. Agreed. Aminika Shetikmo. The Gemara is now up to our next woman, and that is the nursing woman. Also in a category, Mesalak is Daman. Tan Rabban, the Gemara quotes the Brayza. Aminika Shemes Benabes Sochesim V'Arba Chodesh. Harei Kachol Anashim Ometame Meisa Eisum Epikil Epikidol Afichachim Haisa Aminika Asa V'Olachas Arba Chamishanim Daishai Tedivre Meir. Remeir is of the following opinion, that her nursing is a function of her nursing. I know it didn't sound that smart, but it is. I'm not calling myself smart. It's a reference to Rabbi Meir. Meaning Rabbi Meir says that the nursing woman is considered Mesalakas Damim when she's actually nursing. So for example, she weans her baby at 1 year. Or Rachmanus as an example. She loses her baby after the first year. In either case, she's not nursing after the first year. She's not Mesalakas Damim. She's not afforded the status of Daishaita when she stops nursing. But the converse would also be true. If she's nursing the child 4 to 5 years into the child's life, so according to Rav Meir, she has the status of Mesalakas Damim all the way 4 or 5 years until when she finishes nursing. Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Shimon, Omrim, Dayan Shaita Kol Esrim V'Arba Chodesh. And according to the opinions of these other Tanayim, 24 hours. Leficha Chemaisa Minikasa Arba V'Chamishan Minatame Meseis Mepikila Bekida. And so that means then that according to these Tanayim, if let's say she even continues nursing into the 4th, 5th year of the child's life, she is still going to be considered a regular woman and not given the status of Mesalakas Damim. Meaning, what comes out now is that according to these Tanaim of Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi, and Rabbi Shimon, is the idea that even though it's a nursing woman, it's not a function of her nursing. It's a function of her being postpartum. That's all. She, in other words, she gave birth. And the Gemara spells all this out. So kishatim salam ledivrei Rav Meir im nekar. I'm sorry, dam nekar v'nasa chalav ledivrei Rav Yosi, Rav Yehuda, Rav Shimon evarim misparkin ve'ein nafsha choseres ad esrim var b'chodesh. And the Gemara spells it out, meaning what is the basis of Rav Meir's position that a nursing woman is given the status of a nursing woman as a function of her nursing? What's behind that is the following. The Gemara has an interesting way to look at the mother is nursing. What is lactation? And again, I'm not describing it biologically. I'm discussing it halachically. And I know there's a confluence between the biology and the halacha. I understand that. And perhaps there are ways to explain that confluence biologically. Again, as I said before, my chief job over here is to explain the Gemara and the Gemara's viewpoint. As far as how it cross-sections with biology, so I let people who know biology much better than me, I'll let them explain it. But as far as the Gemara is concerned, the Gemara says like this, that what happens when the woman lactating is that she is, her bleeding that would have emerged from her is going to be converted, and that serves as the milk that comes out of her. So that means to say that as long as she's lactating, so that means to say now she's in the status of Mesolek Hazamim because of this conversion of blood to milk. That's Rabbi Meir. And so that means that according to Rabbi Meir, once she stops nursing, so then she's no longer Mesolek Hazamim. And as long as she's still nursing, so then she continues to be Mesolek Hazamim. And according to the other Tanayim, no. The nursing status that's given to her is not because she's nursing, it's because she's postpartum. And for 2 years postpartum, so a woman is just simply a weaker version of herself. And so therefore the bleeding that comes out is going to be a weaker version of it. And so therefore she's going to be in status of Mesolek Hazamim. Not having to actually do with nursing, just having to do with the fact that she's postpartum. Now the Gemara points out, Lefichach de Rav Meir Lamali. Now this explanation that we get for a mayor, like was it necessary? Meaning, of course the answer is yes, but did we have to spell it out? So the Gemara says, Mishum Lefichach de Rav Yossi. So the Gemara says, well, we did need to spell out the basis of Rav Yossi, Lefichach de Rav Yossi Lamali. Well, the Gemara says, was that necessary? The Gemara says, yeah, it was necessary. I might have thought that Rav Yossi actually takes his consideration, the weaker state of the woman postpartum, and he also agrees to the principle of Rav Meir, that blood goes ahead and converts into milk. So Kamash Falan. So the point that we're making is that no, that the shitas of Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Shimon, so they're all predicated on the weaker state of the woman postpartum. And it really has nothing to do with nursing, which is, by the way, if you think about it, it's a little bit of a curiosity because what we had in the Mishnah is the Mishnah describing her as being a menika. But now, according to these Tanayim, that's not it. What's it is the fact that she's just simply postpartum. Tanya Namihachi, the Gemara now is going to quote a brisa supporting this. Dam Nekar v'nasa chalav divrei Meir Reb Yossi Omer Evar misparkin ve'enaf shech chozer salah ad esrim var b'chodesh. Okay, the brisa spells out these two positions, and not just the two positions, but the basis of these two positions. Amar Rabbi Lai, my time to Rav Meir. Dichsiv, mi yitain tahor, mi tamei, lo echad. So the Pasuk in Eov notes that who can make something kosher from something non-kosher, right? The paradox of having kosher being sourced from something which is non-kosher. And so this is the base of Rav Meir. Now, it's interesting. What? What just happened in the Gemara? Meaning blood, which is something which is prohibited. Now, I know we're talking about a human. So, and human blood, whether that's prohibited or permitted, we discussed that back in Croesus. But it doesn't have to be that fancy. It's a simple idea that blood, which is generally something which is prohibited, blood of an animal is prohibited, and meanwhile, what does it yield? It yields milk because of that conversion. And milk, obviously, is permitted. So how can milk be permitted when meanwhile the source of it is blood? Oh, so it's a paradox. And so this is the source of the position of Rav Meir. V'rabbanan amar Rav Yochanan zu shech v'zera. And now as far as the Chachamim are concerned, meaning, yeah, Eos paradox, I'm with you. But I have a different example for Eos paradox, and that's the zera of a man. The zera of a man, obviously, it is a source of tumah. Shech v'zera is metame, and meanwhile, it produces a human being. And that human being is tahor. Shu tamei v'adam anotzer mimenu tahor. V'Rabbi Elazar omer, Elo mei hanida shehamazel mazen alav tahor, v'nogea tamei. And the Gemara gives now another example of Eov's paradox. And I'd say the most famous example of Eov's paradox, which is the person sprinkling the paraduma, the solution of the water and ashes of paraduma, and the person who's being sprinkled on the pond, they're both tahor. Now, if that sentence, by the way, confused you, because you normally hear it differently, mm-hmm. we're gonna explain that better in just a moment. They're both tahor, but meanwhile, someone who touches the water of the solution and he didn't need to be sprinkled upon, he himself is going to be tame. Okay, and so we have a paradox where the solution of the paraduma, the spring water, and the ashes when mixed together. So anyone comes over and touches it, they're going to be tame. But meanwhile, anyone who's in the tahara process, both the sprinkler and the sprinklee, so they're going to be tahor. Now, I know what you're used to hearing is that the one who sprinkles is going to be tame. I know you're used to hearing that. After learning a little bit of today's daf, we're going to just simply get a point of clarification. And that is, it's a misconception. Common misconception. But no one should feel bad about having such a misconception. The Torah gives this misconception. And so the Gemara now is going to clarify this quote-unquote famous misconception. The one who sprinkles is not going to be Tameh. But it doesn't change the paradox. The paradox still exists. Because somebody else coming along and just simply randomly touching this solution, he's going to be Tameh. The paradox is fine. The only misconception is just that detail that the one who sprinkles is going to be Tameh. And the Gemara now questions, you're right? You're right about that? The one who sprinkles is going to remain tahor? Doesn't the Torah tell us that the one who sprinkles is going to be tame? So my mazeh nogea. The Torah meant the one who touches, not the one who sprinkles. Vaksiv mazeh vaksiv nogea? Really? Go through the psukim and Parshas Chukas regarding the paraduma. The Torah says the one who touches and the one who sprinkles. And you tell me the one and the same person? Va'od mazeh by kibus. Nogea lo by kibus. And on top of that, we have a tradition that the one who sprinkles requires his clothing to be tovel, meaning he requires tefillah in the mikvah and his clothing as well. The nogea, only he requires tefillah, but his clothing does not require tefillah. Elamai mazeh nosei. So the Gemara says, okay, the word mazeh, as it's in the Torah, is the one who's carrying the solution of the water and the ashes. V'lichtov nosei. So the Gemara says, really, if the Torah meant the one carrying it, so why wouldn't the Torah say the one carrying it? So Kamashlan da Adadar Kashir Hazah. Because the Torah wanted to use the word mazeh to give us the amount, the shear. The shear has to be an amount in which the tumah comes from the person carrying it. The amount that he has to carry is a sprinkle's worth. Now what does that mean, a sprinkle's worth? Hanich Lamandamar Hazah Sricha Shir Elamandamin Sricha Shir Michael Amar. Now, whether or not there is a minimum shear for sprinkling, the Gemara says that's a machlokus. So if I say that there's a shear, so then you're right. But if there's no shear, so then you're not right. So the Gemara says, even the one who says you don't need a shear, that is not totally accurate. The one who says you don't need a shear just simply says, I don't need a minimum amount of the solution to go on the person. Even the smallest amount that is dripping on the person when being sprinkled would create the tahara. However, when you're taking your azov, your hyssop, and you're dipping it in the bowl, the amount in the bowl, that has a minimum requirement, according to everybody. Kedinan, the Gemara here quotes a Mishnah in Para. Kami hei b'mayim v'hei b'hem k'dei azah, k'dei shit bo rashi giv olim v'yazeh. Enough so that the tips of the azov, the tips of the hyssop, are all going to come into contact with water. And then you sprinkle it. In that regard, everyone agrees there's a shear, and so therefore, when the Torah says mazeh, it's talking about the one who's carrying. Why would the Torah say mazeh? To give us a shear. And according to everybody, the shear in the bowl is going to be the amount that can that would cover all the azov when being dipped in.
They sprinkle blood, not water, right?
No, they sprinkle water. Water. V'hanu d'amr Shlomo, and Shlomo says, Amarti mimeni. And now the pasuk in Kohelet, which we're all familiar with, but now we're seeing it in the context of Eov's paradox, meaning Shlomo HaMelech says, look, I tried hard to understand it, it's beyond me. Ezu Izakena, let's continue on the Gemara. We are now on the bottom of the Amud, and we are now up to our third woman. We're up to our fourth woman. I knew I was off. Right? We covered so far the basula, the woman who has not yet started menstruating. The muveris, the woman who's pregnant. The menika, the woman who is nursing. So those all we covered. And now, ziknus, menopause. So the woman now who is entering the age of menopause, so she also is going to be considered mesulak is damim. And, but according to our Mishnah, she has to miss 3 menstrual cycles. Now, how do we know that she reached the age of menopause prior to her actually experiencing menopause? And so what the Gemara is going to do, and I know it's cute, it's going to be, you know, it's the Gemara is going to try to give a halachic definition to arriving at a certain age. Meaning, if she experienced menopause, obviously, so then you have what to show for it. But we're obviously looking at before she actually experienced it, but we know she's at that age. So the Gemara says, people call her, you know, the old woman. And when people say the old woman, yeah, right, okay. Right. So that is a benchmark. Rabbi Shimon Omer, kol shekaren la ima ve'ina busha. It's a similar type of definition. People call her ima. Back in the day, when a woman has arrived at a certain age, so instead of just simply referring to her by her first name, her friends, so they give her a title of ima in front of it. It's a sign of veneration, and you've arrived at a certain age. Rabbi Zev, Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Yitzchak, Chana Amar Kol She'enu Makpedes, V'Chana Amar Kol She'enu Busha. Now, here, a subtle distinction between the Amorayim. One position is that she's not Makpid. She doesn't, it doesn't offend her. Another version is she's not embarrassed. Now, my Beinau, though, I know it's really subtle, but there is a subtle difference between these two ways of saying it. Ika Beinau, Busha V'enu Makpedes. Where on one hand, she does experience a little bit of embarrassment every time she says it. Right? Like, I'm that old? But she doesn't stop people from saying it. Right? So. Okay. Vikama ona. Okay. Now, we said that a woman arriving at this age, so when she misses, after having missed 3 menstrual cycles, then she's in the category of misalak is damim. Now, missing 3 menstrual cycles, what does that mean by menstrual cycle? I know we know the answer to this, but the Gemara is going to give voice to a menstrual cycle. V'kama ona amar Yish Lakish mishum Rabbi Yehuda nesia, ona benanis shloshim yom. So the average menstrual cycle is going to be 30 days. And so that means to say that she has to be skipping 3 30-day periods. So meaning a 90. On day 90 now, where she has missed her first, second, now, and third cycle, now she's in the status of Mesulak is Damim. Which means, halachically, that at this point going forward, if she were to see again, obviously she's an Ida, but she does not go back retroactive 24 hours. Okay. Understand, by the way, we're putting in a lot of time, energy, effort into learning these Gemaras. From the Gemara's perspective, you know, the payoff over here is just one day of Tumah. That's, right, from the Gemara's perspective, that's a lot of discussion for... I don't want to say a little payoff, but that's really the entirety of the discussion. It's just whether or not she's going to have the retroactive tumah me'es la'es. The ona beinu shoshim yom, Rava amar Rav Chista esrim yom, and Rava says in the name of Rav Chista it's 20 days, and they're not debating v'lo pligi. Amar kachashiv yemei tumah v'yemei taro amar lo chashiv yemei tumah, meaning that look, the nida is 7-day period. And then afterwards, you have Yemei Ziva. Now, I know it's an 11-day period, but if she bled for the first 3 days, so then she would be a Zava Gadola. So the first 3 of the 11 is her first opportunities of being a Zava Gadola. So that's 7 plus 3, that's 10. Add another 20, that's 30. They're saying the same thing. Tanu Rabbanan, the Gemara quotes the following verse: Zekenesh Avro Allah Gimel Onos Verasa Dai Shaita. A woman who has arrived at a certain age and she misses 3 menstrual cycles, so daishaita. So from this point, she's misalak is damen. Now, let's say this happens again, right? Nachamol, where she now goes and skips 2 cycles, but she sees now on the 3rd. So that means to say that She skipped cycle 1, 2, and then she saw on the third. So that's 30, 60, 90. And then she did that again, 30, 60, 90. And then, and to which the Gemara now says, you know what just happened? She basically has created a new cycle for herself. Whereas she, once upon a time when she was younger, experiencing the average 30-day cycle, but now as she's entering old age, so we thought it was menopause, but now what comes out is that basically it's a, right, it's a different cycle. It's the 90-day cycle. And because she now experienced it 3 times in a row, she now knows she's no longer Misalekas Damim, she's Anita with a different interval cycle in between each one. Velo Shekivna, and we're not talking where they came exactly 90-day intervals, Ela Fil Pichsa, Vosira, even if it's a little bit more, even if it's a little bit less, where it's not a Vest Kavua, it's not a fixed cycle, but nevertheless, we now see that, look, but it's a cycle.
But it could become a Vesco after 3 cycles.
Yeah, sure. It could end up becoming one. But the point the Gemara is making is Misulekas Damim will not, she won't be given the status because we now see she's bleeding on intervals, even if they're not exact, but still they are now intervals. So Afilopichsa, I'm sorry, the Ella Afilopichsa Vosira. So the Gemara over here is just a really technical question. Afilopichsa Velomi Baikivna. Even if they are somewhat staggered and it's not exact, Adarabba, ki kivna kavalei vesta, v'day shaita. So the Gemara says, wait 1 second. If she was michavein, meaning in her new interval cycle of 90 days, if she was precise and exact, so that brings us to another issue, not issue, but another consideration, which is she now has a vest kavua.
Right.
And if she has a vest kavua, isn't she also afforded the status of daishaita? And maybe you'll tell me, well, you know this was controversial. You know we debated this earlier in the Masechta, Rabbi Dosa and the Chacham, and whether a woman who's vest kavua, a fixed cycle, whether or not she is going to be given the Mesa'es or not given the Mesa'es. And maybe you'll tell me that we're going like the Chacham and we'll argue with Rabbi Dosa. So, Ibchami Ba'ilei. Still, the wording of the Braisa is a little bit off. Because the point the Braisa is making is that when she has 3 intervals at new intervals, instead of them being 30 days, they're now 90 days or even somewhat staggered. But still, the point the Braisa should be making is if she is staggered or even if she was mechavin. That's the way the Braisa should have said it. Velema, velop shepischa vosira, ela afilu kivna. That's the way the Braisa should have said it. So the Gemara says, Tani, lo shepischa vosira, ela afilu kivna. So the first approach of the Gemara is, you think that's the way the Braisa should have said it? So here's my suggestion to you. Take my pen, go to the Braisa, and edit the Braisa. Okay, that's suggestion number one. Or, ibaisei ma'achi kamar, velo shekivna, ela shepischa vosira, ava kivna kavla ves, v'day shayta umani rabbi dosihi. Or the Gemara says, I'll tell you what, you could say it like this, that we are going to say that going 90, but let's not have it exact 90. Let's say she went 91, 89, right, 93. But now you clearly see that she's having a cycle. It's just that the intervals now are just longer. So under those circumstances, she now is no longer considered Misalekas Damim. But if it happens to be that it becomes 90, where now it's a fixed cycle, so then the halacha would be that it is true that she is now no longer menopausing. She clearly is bleeding, but because now it's at a fixed cycle, so therefore she's not going to have to go back meis leis, and it'll be daishaita, and the author of the Braisa is Rabbi Dosa. You could say that in the Braisa as well. Okay. Rabbi Lazar Amar kol isha she'avru aleha, Tanya. Amar lehem Rabbi Eliezer Chacham and Maisa Beriva Achas, there was a story with a young woman, Behislo, name of a town, and what happens is that she missed 3 cycles, meaning she started menstruating, she missed 3 cycles, and the matter came in front of the Chachamim, and the Chachamim were lenient, and didn't give her the Me'eis Leis, the 24 retroactive hours. Amr lo ein shasat chakraya. And they say to Rabbi Eliezer, okay, you may be right, but that doesn't mean you're right. Meaning, in that particular circumstance, the Chachamim were Meiko. But in general,
Just because a woman misses three cycles does not mean she automatically is misalak as damim. It has to be one of the women we described, but not every woman. So my shasat chak. So the Gemara says now, shasat chak, what exactly does that mean? Igadam ishne betzoros hayu. So according to one version, it was a famine, and there wasn't a lot of food. And to now be metame, 24 hours retroactive, so that means there's going to be less of something that already is scarce. Igadam, another version, taharos afish la'avida v'chashu rabban lehefse de taharos. And another possibility is that she, in the last 24 hours, was dealing with a lot of taharos, and this is what's called hefse meruba. It would have been a great financial loss if we would have gone back 24 hours. And so in the consideration of great financial loss, and this is an important and there's a legitimate position to fall back on, so then you could fall back on that legitimate position in the consideration of great financial loss. Tanu Rabban, the Gemara quotes the Braisa. Maisa v'asa Rebbe k'Rebbe Eliezer. Now, this should sound familiar because we did this Gemara earlier in the Masechta, but this speaks to the same idea of Shasat Chak. There was an occasion where Rebbe passed like Rebbe Elazar, la'achash and his karma k'dayu Rebbe Elazar l'smo chalav v'shasat chak. And then his response is, look, I shouldn't have passed like Rebbe Eliezer, but it was a shasat chak, so after the fact, it's okay. My la'achash and iskar, what did he remember? Yilem la'achash and iskar den alachik Rebbe Eliezer. Elak rabbanu b'shasat chak heichad heichi avid kavasei. To which the Gemara says, I don't get it. If in fact the halacha falls like Rebbe Eliezer, I'm sorry, if the halacha does not fall like Rebbe Eliezer, so then, and they paskined already, so then Rebbe doesn't have any allowances to go like Rebbe Eliezer. So, but rather the halacha goes like neither, meaning there is a majority position, a minority position, but nobody at this point historically has paskined the halacha. Now, even at that point in time, there still is a preference of who you should side with, because it's Rabbim against Yachid. But because it was a time of need, and because Allah wasn't Paskin, so at least now we could rely on the position of Rabbi Eliezer under the consideration of Shasat Chak. Okay, we'll stop over here. Tomorrow we're going to pick it up with Tanu Rabbanan. Let's quickly recap. Today, we went through the women who are misalak as damim and therefore don't have to go back 24 hours retroactive from the time that she saw. And today we covered the woman who was pregnant, the woman who was nursing, and the elderly woman. These are all women who are given statuses of misalak as damim, and we try to give definitions to all three of these women in terms of when they are in these statuses, what is the cause of these statuses, and when do these statuses come to an end.